Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We get, we do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight just to land on the line.
College basketball fans, the College Ball Show is back. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to break down everything that is college basketball. First show of the year. It's good to be back. We, of course, do college football until the national title game. Then we transfer over to college basketball. It's definitely going to, you know, we're going to cover that on a weekly basis all the way through the national championship. And if you're a basketball fan, odds are you like the NBA playoffs. So stay with us all the way through the NBA finals. And, of course, we'll even talk draft, and we'll have a big free agency show as well. So just stay tuned to the College Ball Show all year long, basically from like late August until somewhere in July. It really matters who signs, who the biggest name. That's what we wait for. And we've had some pretty damn big names in some of these free agencies, so I'm sure this one will be somewhat eventful. I don't know if it'll beat last year. But anyway, that's not till the summer. We're not worried about that. Right now, it's all college basketball. And since it's our first show of the year, we'll probably start by kind of an overview, what we've thought so far. Obviously, we were focused so much on college football as well, so that kind of, you know, skews things. It's nice to see the non-conference stuff, see a game here, see a game there, watch a second half here, watch the last 5 minutes of a game there, check some stats, just kind of look around as you do as a sports fan. Obviously, we're more of a hardcore variety college basketball fan, that's for sure. So I think we should, Marshall, I think we should start by just kind of both of us kind of giving our thoughts on the season so far. You know, I'll kind of list some teams as well. You know, even using the new ranking, not system, but the new rankings that just came out not too long ago. And just we'll kind of talk about where we're at thus far. Obviously, we've passed most of the non-conference, although, you know, we do have some non-conference matchups during the year, which is kind of cool. The ACC, but the SEC and the Big 12 do that. So that's pretty cool. I remember that from last year going, oh, yeah, that's right. They play them. Oh, that'll be a good matchup type thing. So we'll definitely get that. I believe Kansas and Kentucky is right around the corner. But anyway, so we'll start the show with that. Then we'll move on to recapping the weekend, what happened last weekend, and just kind of catch us up until today. You know, what we'll take a look at. I mean, it was a busy weekend. The last couple of weekends have been phenomenal on Saturdays. Really ever since, you know, the bowl season went down, the Saturday schedule has just been jam-packed. So we'll definitely catch you up on what happened from this last weekend, especially Saturday. This next Sunday is pretty solid, too. And obviously after the Super Bowl, then Sundays start to fill up. Right now it's been mostly Saturdays for obvious reasons because, you know, the NFL does own a day, like it says in that movie. But anyway, then we're going to look up to the matchups that we got during this week and then on the weekend as well. There's a lot of great matchups on paper, some marquee matchups. Other times, we kind of look at the hardcore variety. You know what I mean? Kind of look at the games under the radar that the college football fan who's been there for a while, I'm sorry, college basketball. This is the first college basketball show, so you gotta bear with me here. I'm still following some recruiting for football, so you know I can get my words twisted, that's for sure. But so we'll kind of do all that. We'll preview and predict and give our thoughts on the upcoming games and whatnot. But either way, let's kind of get caught up, Marshall. And like I said, I'm gonna kind of, obviously, just like in college football, we have some personal teams that we follow and we cheer for. And then obviously the national scene as well. So we can kind of combination this thing up like we do usually anyway. Obviously, I'm just going off the newest ranking when we're talking about the AP. I'm not going to get detailed and do power rankings or whatever. It's just a random, AP. It's not the coaches poll, but it really doesn't matter. I'm not doing it for the ranking themselves, order and everything. But, the returning champs, Villanova, looking pretty damn good this year. Kansas, always pretty solid. Will Baylor, or anybody else for that matter. Right now it looks like Baylor could be a squad that might be able to win the Big 12 outright, which hasn't happened in a long, long time. Kentucky is young, but they tend to get better as the season go on. Obviously, Gonzaga, still unbeaten. Not completely untested. However, their West Coast Conference isn't what it was a handful of years ago. So it'll be interesting to see if they can keep that flow going. Florida State just got a big win and played pretty good against the North Carolina team not too long ago. Arizona just beat UCLA. That was a fun game to watch, Marshall. I enjoyed myself. And Oregon is number 10 as well. So there you are looking at it, and you got three teams from the Pac-12, which has clearly been down, in the top 10. Of course, Butler is a team that's always kind of consistently there. Virginia, Louisville, Notre Dame, Wisconsin is a team that always improves come tournament time, same with Michigan State. So I think Purdue's a pretty good club as well. They've had a tough schedule. They're 16-4. They're a good club. They got a big game coming up against Michigan State, another team that improves as it goes, although, they're missing some pieces right now. So I'm not sure how good they'll be until they get it all back. Of course, I got to mention Duke. Otherwise, you wouldn't get pissed off during this show as much. So I got to mention Duke, the Duke ankle trippers or whatever you want to call them. Maryland is a team that didn't really get tested in the non-conference, but it does look like they're kind of turning the corner. So just kind of going through some of these teams, obviously UCLA, UCLA, I like to call them UCLA. They've had some talented players come through, no doubt about it, right? In recent years, I'm not talking about the Westbrook and Love days, although, they made it to what, three? UCLA made it to three straight final three. Was it three Final Fours in a row or two? I can't remember.
I think it was three.
I think it was three, but they made either way 3 and 4 years or whatever the stat was. But they've fallen in how good they are as a program, and Arizona's definitely they've always kind of been there in the Pac-12 for a while, but they've definitely dominated that. Even Utah and some other teams have stood up and been better than UCLA in a lot of ways. They did make the tournament a handful of years ago. I remember they made the Sweet 16, beating my Gophers, Tubby Smith, last year in the second round. But they got some talent there, and some of the talent has finally stayed. That's the thing. They lose so much talent that they're not in that Kentucky and North Carolina. They're not in the reload as far as being good to reloading. They usually get a lot of talent, like I said, but it either doesn't stay or it leaves or, I don't know. They just haven't been able to put it together per se consistently. That said, like I said, a handful of years ago, they were in the Sweet 16. So there are some new teams in there. Baylor looks the part, although they did, just take a pretty strong L. But, that was their first loss of the year, so I guess you can't really get – maybe, it got to their head. Louisville's still getting healthy. As we're looking through this, Marshall, what has what has impressed you? What has surprised you? Obviously, catching up with the North Carolina squad as well. I'll catch up with the Gophers, who are in their midseason slump, which is very normal for the Gophers. But, yeah, just kind of give me an overview of what you think of some of these top teams, what you think of North Kakalaka, and all that. You know, like I said, in the non-conference, a lot of times maybe you only see a second half of a game, or, you know, we were so kind of caught up on college football and obviously pro football as well, that sometimes you miss, you're not going to see every non-conference game like you see a lot more during the regular season. But what are some of your thoughts thus far on the non-conference, and here we are in the regular season as far as some teams? And we'll talk about conferences as well, because I'll tell you what, the ACC, and it's not as deep, but the Big East, to me, actually, if you look at it, it may be top-heavy, but I'm not saying it's back to where it was, because it's not as big and all that, and the medium team or the mid teams aren't as good as the mid teams, you know, back then. I'm not trying to say that, but it did take quite a drop, considering, you know, all the teams they lost. And now you can see, because they did it a smart way and they brought in smaller schools, but they're basketball schools, which I thought was important. We even mentioned that when, you know, this took place, that at least they kept with the basketball theme, and that's really their only saving grace. And here they are with some quality teams at the top. But right now the ACC, for me, stands alone as the toughest conference. But like I said, there's some clubs in the Big 12. The Big East looks pretty damn strong. The Big Ten is deep, but it's not top heavy. The top tier, they're still looking for a team that actually looks like it could compete for a championship, but it's definitely deep when it goes to quality average stuff, you know what I mean? What are your thoughts thus far of what you've seen, man?
Overall, I've been obviously happy with my Carolina boys. I've found this year to be, I would say, maybe a little more entertaining than last year, just because it appears that we kind of just have some more enjoyable teams up top. Last year kind of felt like when about this far into the season, you're like, oh man, we got about three or four teams that are like really, really good, and everyone else is trying to kind of catch up. So it's been kind of a little refreshing, I guess, to see. I mean, granted, it is kind of the same names, but Nova kind of building off their title from last year, and Kansas staying strong. Gonzaga, who has always been a good team, but maybe they've finally moved it up another level. I mean, they're undefeated. Unfortunately for them this year, they maybe won't get tested as much as they normally do. BYU is having a down year for once in their regards. And St. Mary's is good, but there may be a little bit of a step back. But nonetheless, you're undefeated. And then that brings you down to number four, Kentucky, I guess, as I kind of trickle down the rankings. And I believe, I mean, they have one of the best players in the country. It appears that the Josh Hart for Villanova, who clearly had a great season last year and continues to have a great season this year, kind of gets the accolades of being the best player in the country. But I have not yet seen a guy with more athletic ability and just pure natural basketball instincts than Monk on Kentucky.
Maybe in his backcourt partner, too, just so you know, just to add that in, too. That's a good point. His backcourt partner is good, too. That backcourt is very underrated. Good call on that.
It is, and I guess what kind of really stuck it to me was that they played a phenomenal game with Carolina. I believe the final score was Kentucky 103, Carolina 101. I believe they just cracked 100, and Carolina came up short by two with a late shot at the buzzer that actually got stuck in between the backboard and the hoop. But Monk dropped 49 points, and he made it look easy. I mean, I've been a Carolina fan, I would say basically a diehard, since about 96, 97. So it's been the team I've loved more than any team in my whole life of sports, and they're my pride and joy, which, if you're new to the show, you'll find that out. I love my baby blue. he dropped 49 on them, and it was like, it's not like we're trying. I'm not saying we're an elite defensive team this year, but, like, it would be a transition. I'm just going to pull up for three from about 30 out, like Curry, and just bust it. I mean, there was no flaw in his game. And when I've seen highlights of him on ESPN, when he drives the lane, he makes it look effortless. He just has that flow to him that certain guards have in basketball and certain guards don't. He just he plays like he's kind of just in cruise control. So I'm not sure if he'll get necessarily maybe all the pub he quite deserves from the national rankings, because I know, like, obviously Lorenzo Ball for UCLA gets a lot of credit. Josh Hart, people are in love with Frank Mason on Kansas, but I mean, we know who Frank Mason is. The guy's been in Kansas forever and is repetitively good. But the guy named Monk has really stood out for me for Kentucky this year, who's a name that if you don't know of yet, you will, because he will continue to have his 30 to 40 point games if they do decide to go to him. Obviously, a team like Kentucky, as usual, is loaded with talent that Calipari will piece together week by week. They'll only get better and better, and you just kind of have to pray they don't come to your side of the bracket, because a guy like Monk can kind of turn into, and I'm not saying this for privilege knowledge, but turn into a guy like Karl Anthony Towns. Not that he will become him, because Karl Anthony Towns in the pros has become sick. But in college, Karl Anthony Towns, by the time he made it to the tournament, almost became unguardable. And Monk kind of has that part of him of like, oh, man, it's another Kentucky stud that, you know, good luck guarding him come March, because you don't just drop 49 or 40 on people and do it easy. You know, it's one thing to drive to the rack and get free throws like Harden in the NBA or get lucky, but, I mean, everything he hit versus Carolina, I know I'm going about a month back for that game, but he was busting threes and they were swishes, and it was like Carolina just didn't know what to do. Kentucky dropped 103
too.
Points on us.
Dribble. Off the dribble and what he could do with his handles and when he's in the air, it feels like he can hang that extra second, you know, and do something with the ball where you're like, oh, that was tricky. You know, he does have a way with that ball. He's a playmaker. He can pass. But like you said, there's just that little extra hang where he holds it a little bit and somehow gets it up for a layup. And you're like, that was effortless. Like you said, he makes it look so smooth.
Yeah, and that's that. I mean, we nailed it. So he's definitely a person where you do not want to face him because the kid's damn good. Also, in that same regard, now we're talking in regards to a different player, but Motley on Baylor, I kind of noticed him from the preseason tournaments. I mean, when we were simply when the season started and Baylor was 2-3-0, they went to the Atlantis tournament, which is like in one of those Caribbean islands just south of Texas or Florida, wherever I live, somewhere in the Bahamas. Baylor was down there, and I happened to catch a couple of those games because I was home for Christmas break. And Jonathan Motley for Baylor is also a very fun, intriguing player because the dude is 7 foot, but he's not just the dunker for Baylor, the high flyer. The dude can actually hit a jumper. If you foul him, he's over 80% the free throw line from what I've seen. I believe he probably stays that high. You normally can't kind of fool a person when you watch him on television for free throws. But I think the guy's mid-80s. He's very quick and agile. He's not too tall for his own body. He can run into the post. He's a pain in the butt to guard because, like I said, the dude's 7 foot, 7 foot one. And he has the agility of a guy that's probably like 6 foot eight, 6 foot nine. And he hits jumpers. He can kind of attempt shooting threes. And he's just a very talented seven-footer. When you think of college basketball, a lot of times, like, all right, we got a big, but we only, like, feed him in the block. Or he's not much of a guy that can run up and down and lead a break. Like, this dude kind of does it all. Like, we gave Muck the compliment of kind of playing on cruise control and just floating through the air and with good dribbling and a smooth shot. I kind of have to give the dude Baylor Motley credit because for a guy 7 foot one, he's extremely athletic. You know, some guys that size is just too much for him. or you get a guy like Greg Oden who's maybe a little too big, it puts too much pressure on his knees. None of that's the case. Now, Motley is a pretty skinny dude, but he comes off pretty strong too. So another player that you're going to want to watch just because you don't really – not many teams in college basketball have a dude that can guard someone at 7'1" that can run around the court and hit jumpers or drive to the lane or is a good passer. So kind of a nice name on the map. And then one more team to mention that is ranked 6th, and I'll hop to Carolina, and we'll kind of go back and forth, but Florida State. Florida State's always kind of been a team I've cheered for due to the fact I'm a Carolina fan. I obviously don't cheer for Duke. And Florida State's kind of always been the thorn in the side of Duke. So when I watch college basketball, my viewing rating system goes of cheer for Carolina, and then the next most watched games I try to watch when Carolina doesn't play is cheering against Duke. And Florida State's always been a team, especially when the games are played at Florida State, that Duke just hates going there. Because Florida State always has big, tough guys that will kind of kick the crap out of you. And Leonard Hamilton's the Florida State head coach.
They
always
have
defense.
Bigs. They always have bigs. It's amazing.
His recruiting is to a T, and he always has people that fit that system. It's like there's always some guy from some just country in Africa that is like this 7'2" monster that you're like, dude, how do you find these people every year? And it's like, oh, the ESPN stories are always kind of cool. It's like, well, 2 years in his life, he just moved over to the country and he's, you know, learning English and like going to college.
Right, he redshirted him. He saw the potential, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, and Leonard Hamilton does that every year. And the best case this year for Florida State is he's got about 3 of those bigs. I mean, Florida State's a big, athletic, tough team. This year, they're even bigger and athletic, and they have 3 guards that can score. So he's beefed up his big team already with bigs, and they have guards in Bacon and Xavier Rames, who are talented guards, along with a freshman named like Moscow or something. But I mean, Florida State's loaded. Florida State is a damn good basketball team, and Carolina did beat them head-to-head a couple of week ago, the week of actual week. I went to the Cowboys game
good
versus
game.
Packers, which sucked, but it was a great game. And it was a back-and-forth game to where Carolina had the lead, Florida State had the lead. Carolina was up 10, Carolina was up 2. And it goes to show they're easily 2 of the best teams in that conference. Obviously, Louisville is playing a hell of great basketball this year, but Carolina and Florida State are, as of now, the top dogs, and it was a tremendous basketball game. But again, for Florida State, it's certainly always been, all right, guys, we got some bigs, we got a guard, and we're going to play defense and make you earn it. But they weren't quite that good. This year, they got like 3 guards that can score and extra bigs, and they have a coach that knows how to teach defense with a team that is winning games this year. Christ, their last 6 games have been ranked teams in the ACC, and they're 5-1. So they've been on a hell of a stretch, dude. They've played, freaking 6 ranked teams in a row, and the only game you lost was to Carolina, which the score got a little inflated at the end. I think Carolina won by like 9 or 10. I missed the final minute, but that was a backyard brawl fight of a game. I mean, the score is misleading to think that it was a simple win for Carolina. So, Florida State, not a team I'd want to face because it is his DNA, and it is an even better squad of what he normally projects on the court. And then there's my Carolina Tar Heels, who are continuing to get better. Again, we are crushing the offensive rebounds. We're always good in that department. I'd say maybe even better than normal because we have 4 really good bigs this year. Our 3-point shooting is better than it's been. Our 3-point abilities have improved. We have a couple of bigs who are a little more versatile than just low post people. And our guard play with Joel Berry is just taking another level up. Unfortunately, he's kind of the only guard that appears to be really stepping up as of now, but Carolina is going to be good. My only concern is that, and I say this every year, but normally Carolina's defense improves throughout the season because that's kind of just a Roy Williams team. I mentioned Leonard Hamilton. Now I can kind of break down my Tar Heel coach, who's one of the best coaches of all time. And he normally finds a way to make Carolina's defense improve piece by piece, month by month. And come tournament time, after I've, you know, bitched and complained on here about a couple of games where our defense cost us, it steps up and it's good enough to make us have a deep run in the tournament. So I'll say this, Chris, and I'm trying, and I'm not trying to sound like a broken wheel or repeat it or do the same thing like I do every year, but this defense we have is worse than it normally is. I know I give you this speech, and we've had some great teams. Heck, we had a team that came a shot away from winning the national title last year. And I remember a couple of shows where I ranted about the defense. But this Carolina defense is worse than Carolina defenses normally are. We always have an offense that can score. And I would say that this year we're doing the same thing because we have a versatile bigs. But I, on one hand, our offense is maybe better than normal, but to contradict it, our defense is worse than normal. And it'll get better, but the reason I say that for concern, and I'll throw it back to you, is because Carolina can normally outrun a couple of teams or outscore a couple of teams that are maybe lower tier in the ACC. And I know the ACC is the deepest conference this year yet, but we're staying in games against opponents that we should crush, and we can't do it. And I think that's because of our defense. So I hope that good old Roy can prove me wrong, but I would say I'm more concerned than normal just because, you know, when you're playing a team like a Wake Forest or a Boston College who's having a down year, when we continuously stay in these games till late in the game and then barely run away with our bigs in the back of it, it does scare me. So I'm hoping I'm wrong, but and I love the Heels, and they're a top team this year, and offensively they kick butt, but defensively, this is a, oh man, like I'm not sure how much this can get fixed, because as fun as teams as you get in college basketball, come March, you have to win six games if you want to win a title. And with a team like Carolina, you normally aim to make a title or a Final Four, and this defense needs to do something to change, because I've been seeing too many easy hoops, but I'll stop there. But yeah. A very fun year with a couple of people, as we mentioned with Motley. We didn't even mention Lorenzo Ball or Markel Fultz at Washington, whose team sucks, but he's a phenomenal player. But, yeah, it's been a very fun start to the year, my friend, with the ACC being a very deep, respectable conference. As you mentioned, the Big 12 right there neck and neck. And then the Big East having what it seems to be like four ranked teams throughout the top and the top 15 for – a good stretch there around Christmas time.
Yeah, I don't know if it's neck and neck with the Big 12, to be honest with you. I think they may be a little top heavy this year, but we'll see how that plays out. It is still early enough in there. I do think the ACC definitely stands out from the rest. I really do. I mean, when you look at even Virginia Tech is pretty good this year. Duke is always a team that improves. Same with Louisville. They're 4-3 in the conference, but I wouldn't look at them as a poor team or anything like that. And then I look at the Big East, and Creighton, it's too bad for Creighton fans and whatnot, because they did lose a very key part for the season. So that does hurt them some, no doubt about it, but just looking at Nova, Butler, Creighton, and Xavier, those are pretty quality teams. And like I said, the Big East, although they got torn apart, I thought they did a good job at bringing basketball schools in. And I think it's paying dividends for them, not dividends like having, you know, all those bigger programs in there. But from the circumstances they were working with, I thought the AAC did pretty good at that as well. Looking at the Big Ten, like I mentioned, you have Maryland at 5-1. You have Wisconsin at 5-1. Purdue's a pretty good club at 5-2, speaking of bigs, in experience. Northwestern's kind of been a surprise team, man. Northwestern's making the tournament this year, dude. They're 16-4 and 5-2. They got to make it this year. If they don't make it this year, I don't know if they're going to make it, Marshall, to be honest with you, because
true.
They're set up
true.
To get in there. I'm not saying, like, they're going to hold this position. But then you have the middling teams like Michigan State, who still needs to get healthy. Indiana, who's kind of had a weird year because they look really good in the non-conference, and now they're just – they need to improve, that's for sure. They don't play that great a defense. Speaking of, we talked about North Carolina. Nebraska and Minnesota actually started out very similar, 3-0 and 3-1, and now they've fallen back to 3-4. So at the top, you look at Maryland and Wisconsin, you don't say Final Four, you know. Purdue, I think, has had the best schedule out of all of them, and they're pretty good. But like I mentioned earlier, I don't see a team stand out at this point for a national contender. Not to say that one of these teams can't get to the Final Four, because we know the Final Four will get a seventh seed in, you know what I mean, or even whatever, a third or fifth, or you know. So I'm not saying that they won't. I'm just saying at this point, if you're going to have the best conference label, like the Big Ten has had in the last handful of years on and off, you have to have a national contender, in my mind, you know what I mean? And they don't as of right this moment. That's not to say they can't and develop. And like I said, Oregon sitting at 7-0, Marshall. Arizona 7-0. Utah has been pretty quality. California seems like they're turning the corner. Same with USC. So the Pac-12, I have to give some credit to. And I really wish that they don't have the Pac-12, you know, network like we mentioned in football, because gosh, do I remember on FSN, not FS1, this was before FS1, FSN Thursday nights, man, we talk about those games, and they always had a good matchup on Thursday nights, and sometimes I'd watch the Timberwolves game, and then after, if it was late, or it went to OT, sometimes you just get the second half of a good college basketball game coming out of the Pac-12 on FSN. So now FS1 is – it's actually gone to the east. I mean, don't get me wrong. It does cover some Pac-12 basketball, but it lingers a lot in the east, the Big East and whatnot, in the AAC and stuff like that. But that's something to keep an eye on. But – as we get here focused now, right, as we kind of bring this show up to date, we figured we'd start because we haven't really given our take just yet. So why not start with kind of a little bit of a recap of our thoughts, yada, yada, yada. We're a half hour into the show. If you want to call in, 646-381-4990. Remember, it's on blogtalkradio.com. It's a live show. It's on archives. blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. That's where you can find it. But you can also subscribe to it on iTunes under the Ropeadope Radio platform. So definitely check that out. Leave a review. That also helps us, overall. But let's start last Saturday. Well, I shouldn't say last Saturday, like it was so long ago. From Saturday. It's only 2 days ago, right? And by the way, off subject, but man, talk about non-games yesterday in the conference finals, huh? What the hell was that? Just non-game, dude. It was just like stay busy showcase fights for boxing. You know, you're just like, wow, what the hell happened to this? I was anticipating the NFC game anyway, but don't get me wrong, it doesn't hurt my feelings, you know, to see the Packers go down. And you know what was funny in the bar I work at? Cause you know, I work at a Packer bar. There's about six dudes that came in and they are not Packer fans. They're also not Atlanta Falcons fans. However, for the day they were Atlanta Falcons fans. So they even tried to dress up in like red or black, you know, but didn't have any Atlanta gear on whatsoever, but just had their colors a little bit, you know? And just ripped the shit out of people. And don't get me wrong, sometimes I had to get involved and say keep it verbal and don't get in anybody's faces on both sides, you know. And had that been a good game, the Packers fans would have ate it up because that's what they do to a Bears fan or a Vikings fan or a Lions fan or whoever fans are in there. Because, you know, it'll be almost 100% Packer fans, but you'll see a lingering – you know, especially when it's the North, you know, when it's Detroit or Chicago or Minnesota, obviously in Minnesota, but you'll get a little percentage of that. And it's quite funny. They're free to just rip the shit out of anybody. But once it starts happening to them and their team's getting their ass kicked, then they don't like it so much, Marshall. I wonder why that is.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Funny.
Yeah.
You know, when they show a Bears score, meanwhile, remember, they're not playing the Bears at this time. But you know how they'll just go do a game break during a game, right? They'll say, oh, yada, yada, yada. And it'll show like a good play from the Bears, right? They just scored a touchdown and took a lead or something. And they'll chant, Bears still suck, just out of nowhere for no reason. You know what I mean? So it's like, oh, okay, I get it. It's funny. Anyway, I got a little sidetracked there, but it was just a funny – it was quite funny. It was pretty funny, actually, to see that because, like I said, these guys were Vikings fans. They weren't Atlanta fans at all. They were just in there to fucking start some shit, you know, just like it would be on the other side. But it did get a little weird. But, you know, like I said, when they're getting their team's getting their ass kicked, all of a sudden they take it personal. But it's okay to pick on one dude bar, you know what I mean, which is what happens, too. So it was quite funny, dude. But I'll tell you what, it felt pretty good to be done for the season. I'll tell you that. Coming off Saturday, though, Saturday was good, man. It had a lot of games. Nova got by Providence, who's been pretty quality. Chris Dunn was there. They had a nice big there. I think they're kind of regrouping because they did have that nice run where they had a really good record. I think they made a Sweet 16. But they're kind of in rebuilding mode to an extent, trying to get back to where they were not long ago. Nova got done there. KU handled Texas fairly well, especially they closed them out. Texas, I know they got some bodies out, but they're definitely down this year, and it's kind of making me scratch my head. I've seen them a couple times, and some of these games, they're right in the game. Like I said, I don't know exactly who is all out per se. I know somebody's out that's pretty good, but that's a little bit of a surprising to see their record at this point in the season. But that game between UCLA and Arizona, I watched that game, and that was a fun, up-tempo game. Definitely a West Coast feel to it. Definitely a North Carolina ACC feel to it as well. That's for sure. Up and down, right when you think, oh, he's going to make a run. The team matches it bucket for bucket. You definitely can't spend too much time worrying about how good your shot looked like because all of a sudden dudes down the court and they just dunked on you. So that was a big win by Arizona on the road. Arizona defeats UCLA. At the time, it was 14 against 3. Arizona bumped up now, 96-85. That was a big win. You know, Kentucky pretty much handled South Carolina. South Carolina is a team that kind of looks like they're better this year, but no match for Kentucky that day anyway. On Saturday, here's an upset, though. Kansas State, who now I think is in tied for third. Well, actually, they're not tied for third because they beat West Virginia. They are third. I think they have sole possession of third place. Of course, it's the Big 12, Marshall, so I don't know. Maybe the tiebreakers will – it'll be some kind of weird thing that I don't even know about, and it'll be a weird tiebreaker because you know how that conference –
we can only guess, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be, I beat you head-to-head, but you're the champ. Oh, I gotcha. Okay, cool. Yeah, that makes sense. We're co-champs, co-third-place champs. What the hell does that mean? 79-75, though, Kansas State. And we know Kansas State. We say it every year. It's not the funnest place to play. It's a great place if you're a fan, I'm sure, especially if you like noise and you're sitting in the student section. You're going to be woken up. You don't need any caffeine. West Virginia, who started to kind of look the part of a team when they dismantled Baylor, I mean literally dismantled them, you know, started looking like a team that may compete. We'll see where they're at. They got a big game coming up. Maybe they were peeking ahead, Marshall, at what's coming, and what's coming is Kansas. So maybe they were peeking ahead. They do have them at home. Your squad, the Kakalakas, they beat BC 90-82. Maybe that's what you're talking about too, giving up 82 to a team like Boston College. I agree. I can't sit there and say that they're the worst defensive team I've seen under Roy Williams just yet, but you definitely would know better. But that has always been since he's been there, that's always been his sticking point. Good game, mm-hmm. Florida State and Louisville, 73-6. And I use sticking point. Well, he actually has a different sticking point potentially that we're still trying to figure out investigation-wise. That's a different sticking point. But I'm not trying to he's won national titles there. So let's keep that all in perspective as I rip their defense. They've done, he's done wonders there, no doubt about it. But FSU and Louisville, that was a quality game. And speaking of bigs, you know, Pitino is the same way. We talked about Florida State and what they get these bigs from different countries, and they develop them, they redshirt them, and next thing you know, 2-3 years later, you see them off the bench, you know, and then all of a sudden you see some of these guys that were off the bench a year or two ago, and you're like, wow, yeah, he developed these guys. So that was a good game, though. That was a very good game. I can't remember the guy's name that Louisville they're not playing with now. I know they're having a point guard issue, that's for sure. I believe he got hurt in that game, their point guard. But I think they're down to just one point guard, if I remember correctly.
It's kind of crazy, Chris, how the two incredible, phenomenal programs of Carolina and Kentucky if Carolina and Louisville have been so different. To where, for the last like 5 or 6 years, both have won a national title. I guess if I go back 8 years, have won a national title, have been to many Final Fours, yet do it in a completely different manner. To where every year, you know, Carolina can score 89 points a game, and Louisville can hold a team to scoring 50 points a game. Yet Louisville is always going to be a team that's so freaking good with recruits and talent, but offensively they're like clawing like nails on chalkboard to score and win. And then Carolina's like, man, I hope we can play enough defense. So for two teams that are so highly respectable every year, it's just kind of crazy how, as you mentioned again, Louisville's trying to find a way to score with a point guard. And when they played Duke a couple weeks ago, the offense of the game in the first half, they're like, dude, can Louisville score? Like, people are afraid to shoot. And then for Carolina, it's kind of like, all right, well, we got to work on our defense because, God, it sucks. And, it's just crazy how two highly respectable programs seem to start off every year with that same kind of pattern. And, you know, by the end of the year, Pitino's going to work an offensive scheme into his part of the team, and Roy Williams will find a way to shore up the defense. But every year it's like, huh. Do we really got to go through the whole rhythm? Because I'm sure as a Louisville fan, some games you're like, my God, our offense is only scoring 60 points a game. We're like, come on, really? We got to do this whole thing again? I guess it's just a different way to look at a team than being a Carolina fan that's praying for defense. Louisville's like saying, guys, can we just have offense get going this early in the year and not have to wait till March again? It's just kind of a funny perspective for teams that are always rank so highly and always have one efficiency or deficiency that's always kind of overwhelming for the team.
Yeah, but, you know, that kind of makes sense because you got to pick it. You got to pick a way to win. You know what I mean?
True.
But it is funny how it is the opposite.
Very true.
But it is funny how it is the opposite. You see that in football as well. Some people go, you know what, we're going to load up on defensive players and
mm-hmm.
make the game tight and run the ball. And we'll see what happens there. You want to trade field goals, let's trade field goals, you know what I mean? Or some people kind of load up on that stud quarterback, just like Bama, right? How in the world
mm-hmm.
do they not get stud pocket passers? Well, guess what? When the guy only throws 14 times a game, sometimes, you know, they run the ball so much, why not wear down teams, you know what I mean? So you're right, though.
Mm-hmm.
That is very true. And sometimes that can sometimes that plays exactly with what you recruit. I mean, it has to, right? But other times,
yeah,
it can hurt players as they get to the pro level, and they weren't asked to do that at any level. You know what I mean? They weren't asked to be that guy. Even stud scorers, they get in the league, and they've always had a guy defensively that protected them, you know, that would say, hey, you get that guy, let him cover this guy, so it's kind of a non-cover to save him for the offensive end. But yeah, you're right.
Sure.
They're definitely two opposite, but great coaches at that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they definitely do it a different way. That's for damn sure.
And
North Carolina,
point,
man, they've had some bigs. Go ahead.
I shouldn't complain too much. I've been very grateful for a team I do love to offer me many great years of winning. I'm just a little nitpicky, but one thing to talk about, and I saw this happen this year in the NBA, then I'll parlay it into this weekend. There was a game in the NBA earlier this season to where Toronto was playing Sacramento, and Toronto threw an inbound pass that was deflected, and Toronto got the ball about 2 seconds ago, shot a three, and tied the game of what would have been overtime. But there was a delay in the clock, so the referees essentially got a stopwatch out. Even though the clock started late and the shot looked good on the court, the refs took the stopwatch and determined that the shot really didn't count. There was no replay at the clock. It was like, well, here's what real time really presented, so therefore the game's over. And Toronto was kind of like, dude, what, really? Like, what, the clock is a human error, and then you cost us the game because you replay what actually happened with a stopwatch? We had the same thing happen this weekend against Georgia and Texas A&M, to where Georgia was down a point against Texas A&M, 62-63, which turned out to be the final score, Chris. And with about 5.6 seconds left, the clock froze. Now, as the play played out...
Yeah, I saw that Georgia highlight. I didn't see the game, but I did see the highlight.
Yeah, and Georgia, again, obviously you're trying to score to either get fouled and tie the game or obviously go for a win. Georgia has the ball. The point guard with about 5.5 seconds left is dribbling, makes a couple of passes. Clearly the buzzer doesn't go off, and if you looked up, you know, when you play basketball times, if you're, you know, a gifted athlete, or I should say maybe just a smart point guard, you look up at the clock, glance back down, you keep your dribble and keep going. And if you looked up and saw, okay, I got 5 seconds left, maybe there's only two at that point, he made a pass down low to a big, the big got fouled, and should have gotten the free throw line. But the clock had frozen for long enough to the point where after the officials got a stopwatch, they determined that, okay, there was a foul made, but in realistic time, the foul didn't count because the game was already over. So although it's just one NBA and one college game, I guess what I don't like, Chris, is that if there is a clock error, which essentially is human, I'm kind of more in the mindset of letting them redo the play. Because, okay, in theory, I guess Georgia didn't get that hoop off quick enough, but again, on the court, the clock was frozen. So if you did have the ball in your Georgia and you're a big that catches the ball 3 seconds to go, maybe you make a dribble and you're like, all right, I got to go up now because I got 3 seconds to go. Or maybe you see the clock say 5 seconds to go or something. But the fact that the clock froze and you're like, oh, hold on, Georgia, let's get out our stopwatches. Oh, actually, the game should have been over. Walk up the court, we're done. I just don't like that. And it is a rare case of happening, but I'm in this camp of if there's a clock typo, like let's just redo the play. And maybe my opinion's wrong. But this whole, all right, let's get out our stopwatches. Well, realistically, the game's over. All right, we're done. That just doesn't sit well with me. It's just something about to where the game is finished in a weird way where the players kind of lose control of the game. The outcome is affected due to a score error, whether it be human error or electronic error. I don't know. It just doesn't sit well with me. And I know it's going to happen another time this year where a clock won't start, the timer's slow, or it's going to cost someone a game. And it could happen come March Madness too. And I know they're not going to change the rules right now just because I'm complaining, and I guess it is what it is because they're doing the realistic time. But I was just curious.
Dude,
Chris,
we got a big reach on this show. They're going to hear it. I'm just kidding.
Now, is that something to where you are a believer in the fact that, or I shouldn't say believe, but are you fine with the rule to where if a clock is stopped and play continues, you use a stopwatch to see what realistically did occur? Or are you more of a fan of, like I would be, to where the point where let's go back to where the clock was stopped and then redo the play so we can truly let what should have been play out? What is your take on that? Because I could promise you it will happen again. I hope it doesn't happen in March Madness where a season's on the line, but it easily could.
Are you asking me if I'm a believer? Is this a religious show? What in the hell is going on to our show? We're talking about NFL.
Texas, man.
We're talking about a Packer bar.
I live in Texas, and they're crazy
yeah.
stuff happens down here.
Yeah, that's for sure. However, you know, we haven't gotten our this is college basketball now. It's not college football. So we don't need to talk to them about them 17 times a game. Or a game. a show. But anyway, and anyone that, you know, has followed the show, they know exactly what we're talking about. And we'll hear more about him. Trust me. Trust me on that. But here's the deal.
FAU.
I'm so pissed at how many freaking good coaches are in Florida right now. Oh, it just sucks. But anyway, let's get back to basketball. You know, help. Just bear with us, guys. Bear with us. We're still in football mode a little bit. Just a little bit. It's just still getting them out of our system, that great way to end the national championship game. But anyway, to answer your question, to be honest with you, with 5 seconds left, here's my thing. I totally see your point, and it's easy for me to sit up here and say something like contrary to what your thing is until it's the Gophers. You know what I mean? And
sure.
I'm like, now wait a fucking second. You know what I mean? So all of a sudden, I look at it when I have an emotional tie to a game. In fact, I remember just screaming the other day, on Saturday actually, about there was a fall at the end of regulation. But they said the fall happened right at the end. But I didn't know if that was for sure. So I'm like, whoa, that's a fall. And they said, well, it's not a free throw. Yeah, but we get the ball with 0.5 left. That's a shot, you know, this, that, the other. Now, it turned out not to be or whatever. But here's the thing, Marshall. If there's 5 seconds on the clock, a lot of times you're coming out of a timeout. So you have a play. You have a play, and you also know what time it is, okay? How much time, I should say. I highly doubt that when you catch the ball on an inbounds, you look at the clock at that moment. I highly doubt that, to be honest with you, because you already know going in the play, you only have 5 seconds left. So you know instinctively you should know, okay, I got to get this freaking shot up. And you even see it with less than that. Some people take an extra dribble and put up the shot. You know, just the other day with last night, actually, with the Timberwolves game, God, who the hell were they playing? But they lit Denver. They put up the shot because old boy took an extra dribble, and it was going to be too late. So, to be honest with you, I can see the circumstances to an extent. I definitely can. It just, if the ball's up in the air, let's say off a rebound and the clock stops, right? You're not really going to check the clock. You're going to just put that thing back up. You know what I mean? So I think once you're in the 10-second range, and this is kind of nitpicky, obviously, for me, too, saying, oh, the 10-second range, like there has to be part of the rule. I'm not saying that, but I feel like you're going to know when you need to get the shot up if it's a 5-second thing. And I doubt when you're dribbling about to do the play, you're still looking at the clock at that moment. I think that you're focused on the play that was called. Not always in the timeout. No, that's true. But a lot of times you'll see when there's seconds left in a game, it's not just dribbling down the court for the last shot. You know what I mean? And so
yeah.
I don't know. I think you make a valid point, but I got to say, if there's 5 seconds left of the clock and the clock didn't start, but they whistled, they blew the whistle to start the thing and you inbound the, I don't think you're checking the clock at that point, to be honest with you, because you know internally I got to get this thing up within seconds here. So I actually don't have a problem with the circumstances that you gave me. That's not to say, though, that I couldn't find some things what you're talking about in there. You know, that maybe it is on the dribbling down. It's a tie ball game. I got the last shot, and we're dribbling down. And at the 12-minute mark, you look up to try to get a reference, and it says 22, and you're like, what the hell does that mean? You know what I mean? Then, see, I can look at it differently and go, huh, yeah, dude, that is kind of strange if it stopped really early, but odds are they would have seen that stop. So maybe that circumstance isn't as prevalent as something like you're saying, because I guarantee you, like you said, that it'll happen again.
Well, and in fairness, I guess I should have set this part up better, Chris, but because it seems like I gave you the thought of to where they're coming out of a timeout. the point guard was actually coming up the court with a clock that was live. So I believe when the point guard crossed the half court, it was about 8 or 9 seconds. And then for some reason, during like coming off a pick and roll, the clock actually just stopped, even though the play was currently live going. So that's why I mentioned kind of with the play coming up the court, I think A&M had missed a rebound or a shot, and they were coming up the court, and the point guard made a move to the hoop with 5 seconds left, but the clock froze at that point. So if you were to check the clock at yourself and said, okay, you know, I know there's a little bit of time left, but the, you know, a good point guard would know that, okay, if there's 5 seconds left, I can afford to take two dribbles and shoot a floater or make one dribble and a pass. But if that clock he saw was actually truly at 2 seconds, which the stopwatch would have shown, then you ain't making a dribble and a pass for the guy in your post. You're putting up a shot. So
yeah,
coming out of a timeout, you make a very valid point, but I should have said that it was during a live play, now, which also is very odd because you almost never see a clock freeze. But in that situation,
yeah, you're right.
Kind of
a lot of times you just don't
clock.
See it start. Yeah. Yeah, that's
exactly.
True. That's
exactly.
Point.
Yeah, this thing throws in live play, which could throw the thing off. But,
yeah,
okay, I guess my last part.
There should have been a special. I think that's a detail that they should either add or it should be something. Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Now that I don't think I listened to it as detailed as I probably should have been either, because yeah, I agree with the clock that stops in that time reference of what you're saying. So this specific time, I could see where the ref should have just said, you know what, let's just redo it because it did screw you up. When you're talking about under 5 seconds and then the thing stops, you know, that especially dribbling down the court. I mean, you're only going to look up. There's not many times you're going to look up, you know, once it gets to 5 seconds. I don't think anybody
would
at that point. But yeah, that is a good point. And it's definitely worth discussing.
And to put a bow on it, I guess I should add, just do you have an issue with the fact that they do kind of use a stopwatch to just say, hey, okay, the clock did freeze, but protocols use a stopwatch and see how much time went off? Do you have an issue with the stopwatch idea, or is that fine with you?
No.
Because they are playing realistic. Okay.
Yeah, no, I don't, because of the things I explained about in your head, you know you got to get it off. And if you're at home, they're going to be counting the clock down anyway. If you're on the road, they may be counting it a little ahead of time or behind time and say you got more time. You're like, six. No, you're fine, dude, 6, 5. No, you're 5, 4, 4, 3.
True.
You know what I mean?
True.
So, but I think in your head, you got to know because you're not looking up anyway. But the way you just described it, I was at work when I saw that highlight, and I didn't actually get to see the end of the play. I just remember seeing the clock stop. So that is a little different. That is a little different. And we'll definitely probably revisit this. You know, and we'll definitely revisit it as the season goes. Just to kind of jump through Saturday here, another big game inside the Big Ten was Wisconsin and Minnesota. That was a fairly well-played game. A lot of lead changes. Gosh, I think it was 17 or 18 different lead changes. Very solid game. The bigs, Hayes and Napper. I think it's Napper, Happer, whatever his name is. He freaking can ball his ass off, no doubt about it. That guy is a very good player. And he got our guy Reggie Lynch in the foul problems pretty damn quick. Otherwise, he would have been, you know, that's something I talked about the last time we hung out, that, you know, Lynch is he's got some problems as far as foul problems he's going to have to get. He's going to have to get
every
through.
Every time I watch him play, he's in foul trouble, Chris. I think I've watched probably 20 minutes of Gopher games this year, and I've seen him foul out 3 times in those 20 minutes.
And you know, some of it is obviously, like, when you're that up in the rankings with blocks, I think sometimes you chase blocks. Sometimes, you know, he's just getting into the league too, so you do have that respect or whatever. And if you're just getting in the league and you're known to fall out, well, guess what? They may go.
Yeah.
They may be looking at you even more. And I'll be honest, some of them were blatant, and you're like, come on, dude, you need to not do that. Some of them were bullshit, but that's basketball. That's just calls. That's how it goes. You know what I mean? So
it doesn't help that you're playing a team like a Wisconsin or Purdue who has guys who have good low post bigs that are going to make you guard them every possession almost of the whole game.
In every inch of the freaking court, damn near, too.
Mm-hmm.
Every
mm-hmm.
inch of the half court with Knapp, that's for sure. And what's his toes, because both of them can hit from the outside, and they got great post moves. Knapp's got so many post moves. He's a really good player. But that was a good game. That was a very good game. Yeah, it sucks that that the Gophers lost on my side anyway, but it was still a very entertaining game. So a lot of action from Saturday. You know, Big Monday will kick into to full gear here. It just right now when football was still on. Obviously, this next Sunday and Monday I mentioned is a lot better. Tonight it's just okay. Maybe the schedule would be even a little better if some of the teams that we're used to seeing were a little better as well. Because there is, was it Oklahoma State and Texas or something later? So you go, that would have been a good game, per se, if you look at the last couple of years or whatever. But, we'll start to, because obviously Monday Night Football, well, they're not going to go big Monday, and go head-to-head and put on all their great games then. And just like, Sunday, I mentioned how Sunday is football day. And once that goes, you can see Sundays will start to raise up. You see it this coming Sunday. So as far as getting into this week, like I said, not a ton tonight. North Carolina State, I guess, could turn the corner tonight and beat Duke. Duke is vulnerable at this state right now. They're liable to trip themselves. You know what I mean? Who knows? As they're running out to the court, he could trip people. You never know. Wait until he trips Coach K for disciplining him sometime. Then Coach K will be like, all right, dude, this is bullshit, okay? I've tried. I've only kicked one guy out. You're going to be my second guy that I've kicked off my team, you bastard. But anyway, Tuesday perks right up. Maybe, like I mentioned, number 18 West Virginia was looking ahead and they lost to Kansas State. Maybe they just got beat on the road, not a big deal. Like I said, Kansas State, we've seen plenty of games either come down to the wire or the upset, special come in Kansas State, just like West Virginia. And guess what? Pretty much everybody's back in school now. So you don't have those, it kind of sucks early January. If you're not in a bigger city, the crowds can be weak because they're off. No, that kind of sucks, and it's just part of the scheduling that kind of sucks, but you have to do it because what are you going to do? Change the college? You know what I mean? You can't do that. You can't – sports run colleges, sure, but you can't be that blatant about it. You still got to do your thing, just like, we talk about bowl games and extra games, and let's make it 16 teams and all that. It's like, dude – so when are they going to do their finals? Like, come on, guys. Like, just everybody calm down. We don't need 16 freaking teams, okay? But West Virginia and Kansas, maybe they looked ahead, maybe not. Man, West Virginia last week when they beat Baylor is like, wow, that's something to look at. I do think Purdue at Michigan State is going to be a pretty quality game. Man, how some of the mighty have fallen. Pittsburgh sitting at 12-7, Marshall. Not looking good in the ACC. Louisville does go on the road. Big game, speaking of the ACC, Virginia in North Dakota. Notre Dame. I almost said North Dakota. What the hell's wrong? You see, I'm still stuck in football. But that's a good game. Number 12, Virginia on the road at Notre Dame. Notre Dame just handled somebody big just last night or the night before. I can't remember. But, it wasn't last night. They wouldn't. Yeah, I think it was. I can't remember. They played damn good. And Penn State is actually decent. They're okay, actually. They're decent, better than I thought they'd be this year anyway. So we definitely have that to look forward to on Tuesday. I'm just going to kind of list some games out, and we can kind of break them down as we go. A game on Wednesday, kind of interesting to me. Texas Tech is on the up and up at Baylor. Maybe, maybe Texas Tech can give them a run for their money, per se. UCLA and USC, I talked earlier in the show how it looks like the Pac-12 has got something going. Of course, we said this last year. Remember the RPI or whatever had them all, all ranked, all these top games, and then it turned out you're like, maybe not. But USC is sitting at 17-4, and UCLA is visiting them, coming off a loss They don't want to lose back-to-back. They're 19-2, so number 8 UCLA and USC, I think that'll give a good test of where USC is right now and just how good this Pac-10 or Pac-12 conference is. Another game real quick, and before we get to Saturday's game, Xavier and Cincinnati should be a good one, definitely for the AAC, no doubt about it. And, we'll get into Saturday as well and preview some big games coming up, man. I mean, big games. In fact, Kansas and Kentucky play, and I'm really looking forward to that game, man. That's going to be fun. And, in fact, on Showtime, there's a big fight card. So this is kind of the undercard. They have, like, I believe in total 4 fights between Showtime Extreme and then Showtime, kind of like the prelims like the UFC does as well. But I think this will be my undercard. This will be my undercard right here, Kansas and Connecticut, Kentucky. That'll be a good game. What do you like here? What do you think of some of these matchups during the week? Like I said, starting with KU and West Virginia. Have you had a chance to watch KU this year? Or what do you think of this game? Can West Virginia, who always plays pretty damn good at home, and they just smacked Baylor not too long ago. Sure, they drop one on the road at Kansas State. That's not the end of the world, but they'll definitely be motivated having dropped the game. They probably should have won. Well, they definitely should have won if they want to win the Big 12.
I've had chances to watch KU, and I just choose not to, Chris. I think that answer right along there says my thoughts on Kansas.
I literally was going to finish your sentence just out of a joke, and then you said it. That's awesome.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm not really going to be too high on Kansas. So if you're new to our show, I'm not too fond of Duke, clearly. I've never been a Kansas fan. Part of that's, I think, just, well, it's Kansas. And part of it's when your best friend goes to Mizzou, you don't really cheer for the Jayhawks. Because Missouri and Kansas, you know, the...
we all know it has to do with the historical amount of appearances in the Final Four and the historical amount of championships and how you want North Carolina to be known as the best of all time, and Kansas is kind of that, not necessarily thorn in your side, because it's not like they've matched up a bunch and lost to them or whatever, but we know it has more to do with that than your buddy, your best friend, going to Missouri.
It does, but he was also kicked out of Facebook his first year in Missouri because they created a Facebook group from Missouri that said, "We burnt the city down once, we'll do it again," referencing the Civil War. Needless to say,
can
Chris,
you blame them?
There's some hostility.
Come on now. Can you blame them? I met the guy. He seemed like a real guy. However, you know, I wouldn't say that shit on Facebook, and I say a lot of shit, Marshall. I say a lot of shit, but I wouldn't even do that.
I mean, it was frowned upon probably to join that group as a freshman, but you live and learn.
That's right. I've done plenty
of
that.
The thing I'll say about West Virginia, to switch topics off Kansas, is, again, and I've had that debate with that friend of mine and his younger cousin we have in our group chat, is that, okay, West Virginia, again, can a team who appears to be heavily ranked, as usual, again under Huggins, can you win, can you make a deep run in the tournament with the way they play? I remember last year, West Virginia was riding high, looking really freaking good. Same thing this year. You know, they caused people complete chaos. It's, you know, Press Virginia. It's like, well, God, they forced 25 turnovers a game, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, you can't get into a rhythm, you know. Is that sustainable to make a deep run in March? I'm not saying that if you're a West Virginia fan, you necessarily expect a national title or a Final Four like Carolina or Kentucky or Kansas. But when you're consistently ranked in the top 15 or top 10 for the last couple of years in a row, you know, as a fan base, your standards have to go up, and you also have what is one of the better coaches in the country who's proven it for a long time. I guess I'm just kind of torn, Chris, because
he graduated.
It is a system.
Oh, forget it. He doesn't graduate, as a guy.
it is a system that is different, and it takes a special amount of people. Like, we've talked about how Carolina recruits and Louisville recruits, and okay, you can't just have random Joe, or you can't have guys that you cannot bring in a guy that Leonard Hamilton recruits who's a 7 foot, like, I'm going to pound you inside big, and go play for a Bob Huggins team that wants you to press 40 minutes a game. But it's just every year, you know, when's the last time West Virginia made the Final Four? Well, they can't do it. So I'm not trying to downplay West Virginia. I think they're one of the
best teams
in the country.
It was the year they beat Kentucky when their first freaking – because I remember, I'm still pissed off at that.
Kentucky went like 0 for 24 from three.
Well, not just that, but the other way around, too, that West Virginia only had threes until like 15 minutes left of the game. They had hit all threes at that point. It's crazy.
Yeah.
John Wall and Boogie. I put my money on John Wall and Boogie, and they freaking failed me.
I just wonder, Chris. I just wonder if maybe Huggins found something different, but it's like, man, again, okay, we're going to give West Virginia a lot of love. They play a chaotic style. You're going to turn the ball over 20 times a game, but still, have you proven it to fully work? If your goal is to reach the Final Four this year, can that offense truly get the job done? And I guess we can't really tell, because I guarantee you, Chris, they're going to have a very nice regular season. They're going to be neck and neck there with Kansas up top of the Big 12. But come March, can that system work? And I just don't know. I guess you'd lean to say no, because it still hasn't. But would I want to play them in the regular season? No. Would I want to play Kansas? God, no, because, you know, Kansas is going to go, 12-2 in the conference, or 12-3, and Iowa State and Baylor and West Virginia are going to give them hell, but I'm sure they'll probably win their 13th conference tournament in a row. But I think they'll be a very fun game. I think that past memory is showing that West Virginia should win. Kansas has seemed to have trouble going there the last 3 to 4 years. I remember watching a game when Wiggins was there, and I think the dude dropped Wiggins. Yeah, he dropped 30 or 40, but, I mean, West Virginia still won. So West Virginia is a heck of a place to play. If home field advantage was considered in March Madness, maybe they don't lose a game. Maybe they do win the tournament. But it'll just be interesting to see, bud, because, you know, if maybe you're new to college basketball or kind of wondering about West Virginia, well, they do play a crazy defense, and they lead the nation in turnovers, but it's the same thing every year. And, you know, if you're happy with winning mid-20s of games every year and making the Sweet 16, then that's a great accomplishment. But if you're aiming for truly to have more.
Except the North Carolina fan. You got these standards. You know, you can't apply them to every school, Marshall.
I just wonder what the standard is in the mind of a West Virginia fan, because with the way they play, they're going to have a great regular season due to their tempo, but can it truly give you a deep run in March? I guess is my final point. So I expect them to beat Kansas.
You do.
I expect them to beat Kansas. I do. Cause I think they've beaten.
Just because that's their MO. Yeah. Okay. I gotcha. Yeah.
They
want to be neck and neck. They need to beat them. That's for sure.
Absolutely, yes. If someone's finally going to end Kansas' streak of Big 12 championships, which is remarkable in itself, the fact they've won 12 years in a row, this is a must-win game. And I'll be curious. I hope that the schedule allows us to see. Well, actually, it will. I'll be very curious to watch when Kansas goes to Baylor this year. Because, you know, Kansas will have that couple of stretches of games this year where they lose two or three in a row, but then they don't lose anymore for the whole season. So I don't know. Well, it'll be a tight test. And I'm sorry, I didn't necessarily break down the game, but I just always think Virginia is an interesting talking point.
You did break down the game a little bit because you picked a winner for one, and two, I was just going to fill in for the Kansas side since it doesn't exist on the planet to you, I guess.
That's your observation. Yeah.
The beautiful structure that they got going in Kansas, you don't even know how beautiful it is. No, they are on a run, though. They got beat 103-99 to Indiana. When I saw Indiana at that time, they were ranked – actually, let me check real quick. They were ranked 11th at that time. I said, wow, Indiana's going to be good this year. Wow. They beat Duke, who we know is not really just – they're okay. They did beat Nebraska, who looked good, and now they kind of faltered a little bit. They beat some okay clubs. Kansas State, obviously, is pretty good. They beat them 90-88. That was at home, too. So they have yet to, they beat Iowa State not long ago, just beat on Saturday, just beat Texas, who is down this year. But like you said, here we go, Marshall. They got West Virginia. Then they have Kentucky, at West Virginia, by the way. And then, oh, by the way, they go home, but it's against Baylor, right? Then a game later, they got to go at Kansas State. They got to play West Virginia again and at Baylor again. But and they still – and, you know, even like the mid-level stuff like Texas Tech, who's a little bit improved. Iowa State, who may play him better the second time around, you never know. So we're going to find out just how good Kansas is, you know, in these next couple of weeks, really. And this is a crucial part of their schedule. But they're hot, no doubt about it. They're on a nice run. You can't, you know, you can't deny that.
You know, is it Chris? Is now again? I haven't watched Kansas play, but is Frank Mason just one of those upperclassmen that Bill Self has turned into be? You know, not maybe a freakishly athletic player, but he does everything well. Kind of a five-tool star guy that, you know, for Kansas, he hits the good shots, never gets in foul trouble. Is kind of one of those team leaders. Maybe he won't be a lottery pick, but my God, for college, you can't ask for anything much more, because I've heard the guy's name mentioned throughout years of watching college basketball, and obviously Kansas is on a lot, but it seems like his name is being mentioned this year in a higher lever, or maybe he did commit a lot of time in the offseason to raise his game up a level, because he's getting a lot of praise that I wouldn't say was necessarily there with him the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, he just a quality, you know, quality. I mean, just looking at his numbers for a guard, he's shooting 52%, which is pretty good. He is a senior, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure he's a senior.
Yeah.
20 and 5, he averages, you know, four, as many rebounds as Wiggins gets. but 20 points and 5 assists. You know, 5 assists obviously doesn't seem like that much in the pros, but that's a pretty good number. You know, obviously in the college game, but yeah,
sure.
he's just a quality player that seems to hit big shots and is really developed and all that. But yeah, I think it's because he's been there, done that, and come March, what do we rely on? Experience, either just either Kentucky backcourts that are just, yeah, they're young, but they're damn good, or stud upperclassmen, right? I mean, that's what pays the bills in March, doesn't it not? I mean,
exactly.
A good backcourt,
yeah,
with juniors and seniors, or even sophomores and juniors, the way, you know, the NBA, you know, gets these guys early. So yeah, I just think he's a quality, and, you know, senior leadership and all the cliches. Well, we know about cliches. The reason why they're cliches is because, well, they've been said and tried and true, and they're exactly that. You know what I mean? They're definitely exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep it moving, since you want to talk so much about Kansas. What do you think about Kansas versus Kentucky? It's a big week for Kansas. I know you're pumped.
You know, it'll be fun to watch. I feel like Kansas and Kentucky played there. I started off the season last year, and I believe that was a hell of a game. Yeah, I truly do enjoy watching Monk. Obviously, Kansas will put up a good fight. It'll be a kind of a nice test that measures the two opponents. I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, Calipari, I mean, talk about being the same damn drum. He's getting his team to play it better. He's got a stud in Monk, as you mentioned. He's got a backcourt buddy as well. Kansas is, you know, going to keep it tight. It'll be one of those games where, I mean, we could literally play this game out for the next 6 years, Chris, and you could almost guarantee that it's going to be one of those, like, you know, 10-point games or less. Like, these teams don't blow each other out. Kind of like when Carolina plays Kentucky, it's always a close game, you know, and they switch home and away, and with the Big 12 SEC matchup, kind of same thing with Kansas to Kentucky, because, yeah, last year was in Kansas, and that was quite a matchup. Ooh, Grayson Allen shoving people on North Carolina State's bench as he walks to his own. I'll stop there before I get going on him. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It should be one of the early games of the year. Again, I guess I'll be able to finally see Kansas play this year. And I look forward to watching Mark play for Kentucky. Just because to me he's been one of the more fun people to see this season, and it'll be kind of nice to get a little taste of Kansas just to see, you know, who do they got besides Frank Mason, because that's the name you've heard about. But Bill Self always recruits that one guy who all he does is shoot threes, and he never seems to miss them often. So I'm looking forward to it, but I'll pick Kansas. I think that I'll pick Kentucky. So I think that Kansas loses to West Virginia. I think they lose to Kentucky. Then I think they lose to Baylor. So I got Kansas going on a three-game losing streak.
Man, hey, you did just say they're three in a row. They usually do a two and a three. You remember last year, it seemed like, and you referenced this to an extent earlier in the show about, you know, it does seem like it's more wide open, the field is deeper and all that. I totally agree with you. I think we got quality top three teams at this point. But last year, dude, it was like literally every top team almost lost two or three in a row. And it was something that you rarely see that much.
You're right.
It was like three in a row for so many programs, or at least two in a row. And it was it was like disturbing. You're like, what? I don't know what to think anymore. But, well, I'll tell you what, if you're going to lose three in a row to those teams, it sucks. You could, you know, I'm sure for a Kansas, you know, fan or whatever, like your buddy. No, I'm just kidding. They're probably like, oh, dude, you know, look at the schedule. Yeah, but you got to win at least one of these three. You know what I mean? If you really are saying, hey, I'm the guy. You know what I mean? It's one thing to lose a look ahead game and then lose the game you were looking ahead to, like West Virginia may do. But that was weird last year, man. That was definitely strange. I couldn't get over the fact that that was happening. But I agree. I agree with you. I do think I think Kentucky will get by. I'm not sold on West Virginia beating them for sure, but if they're ever going to, and you know, we talk about betting a lot on the show in general, you may want to definitely, you know, take a flyer out on that. I think it is worth it for a variety of reasons. And like I said, sometimes you lose that look ahead game. Your guard goes down. I know I've done it as a fan, just going, okay, they're not as good as last year, or whatever I may say, and be like, all right, and then all of a sudden the game starts, you're like, geez, man, they're going to beat us, you know, that type of thing. I'm really looking forward to that game, though. That like I said, that starts at 5:15 Central, so it is a perfect undercard for a great rematch fight and a good undercard on Showtime. Maryland and Minnesota, Maryland looking, you know, like I mentioned earlier, they're non-conference. They really didn't get tested much. But we're going to find out. You know, their schedule tightens up a little bit as well. So we're going to find out just how good they are. And Minnesota really needs that. They'll play Ohio State midweek, and hopefully they get that done. But they really need another big win, like that road game to Purdue. That was a key win. Well, now that, you know, we lost Michigan State, we lost to Penn State on the road, we need that quality win again. And I say we as a Gopher fan. So I think that definitely is a big game within the Big Ten to an extent, but obviously on the home front, that's a pretty big game. Any other games stand out to you on Saturday or Sunday? Obviously, you know, hopefully we could do the show next Monday, because that night Duke and Notre Dame play. So that's what we're going to shoot for, is Monday games. Tuesdays can work, but sometimes it doesn't work for me as well because I do work that night. Sometimes it's slow, sometimes it's not. It's very kind of up and down.
Sure.
But we're going to try to, just to the listeners out there, we're going to try. Usually Monday works pretty good for us, so we're going to try. Otherwise, you know, we'll do what we can. We always try to deliver the product to you in a timely fashion. But are there any other games that kind of stand out to you? Like, hey, maybe under the radar type games, or something that kind of stands out, like, hey, these teams aren't maybe as quality as they've been. This will be a good game, or something that you haven't, you know, had a chance to talk about beyond North Carolina and Kansas?
Well, speaking of the Big 12, I'll get that in quick. Obviously, Carolina is my number one, but I always have kind of a team to cheer for. And for whatever reason, I've always kind of liked watching Iowa State play for the past, well, since we've been doing this show. And they're a team that is unranked currently, but I think they have five losses, and all five losses of theirs have been by single digits and all teams that are ranked. So, actually, I just showed the Big 12 standings as I'm watching this Duke-NC State game, and they're ranked fifth right now at 4-3, tied for third. So, kind of just, I would say it's just kind of one of those fun teams where they're not ranked, but they'll be in the tournament. Speaking of talented players, Monte Morris is probably one of the top four point guards in the country, just for the guy averages like a ton of assists and very little turnovers. And they have a couple of sharpshooters, all with Burton for kind of a high profile guy who likes dunking. So I will talk my Tar Heels, but I will mention the Badgers and Iowa State, just because the Badgers, I have family friend ties in Iowa State. I just think they're kind of a fun offense to watch. And it's just another team that maybe can help dethrone Kansas. But Iowa State, again, when you have six losses on the year, you're like, oh, man, that team sucks. Well, if all of your losses are against ranked teams, it's different than losing to a team that is, unranked, or a team that's, in a poor division or something. So, again, I would say the Big 12 is fun. But, again, overall, Chris, the ACC is just on a different level this year. Buzz Williams, who used to coach at Marquette, is now at Virginia Tech and has been going on track. Speaking of win and loss records in conference, Clemson, I believe, is like 1-5 in the ACC, but they took Carolina to the buzzer. They just took Virginia to the buzzer. I think they took Virginia Tech to the buzzer. So they are 1-5 in the ACC, but I think almost every game they've lost has been like a 3-4 point game. So clearly a young team growing up. So the ACC will be an interesting dogfight. Because as we mentioned, Florida State's as deep as ever. Notre Dame is always super pesky. They never seem to have a great pro. But, man, they seem to always pick it up for the last 3 to 4 years in ACC play. But one game just last to mention, Chris, I do see on Sunday that Virginia plays Villanova. I'm not quite sure how they got factored in, because I know the ACC does their preseason matchup with the Big Ten, kind of like the Big 12 is doing with the SEC, as you mentioned, Kansas and Kentucky. But I am curious to watch Virginia this year, and I'll say that because, okay, you know they're going to play defense, but they lost their star in Brogdon, who was kind of their offensive guy, who's actually having a very, very nice year in the NBA as a rookie. But all I really hear about them say is that Parent is their point guard. But after watching him for a couple of years, Chris, he's kind of just really a pass first kind of guy. So I kind of wonder, are there other people that I'm maybe not hearing about, or is this Virginia team kind of just working as a team, or are they still just kind of defensively heavy based? I kind of want to see what the squad they put together, because last year Virginia had just enough offense to make their defense be, like, really badass. Like, oh, man, that Virginia team's really good. But with them losing a couple of seniors who are offensively gifted, I just wonder if they found a way to replace that. So I think watching them play against Villanova, who's just kind of like a well-oiled machine that keeps having these guys from last year kind of carry on their momentum from their national title, I think that'll be kind of a fun game to watch. I mean, it'll show Virginia's true colors. It's on the road in Villanova, which will be even a bigger test. But, we've kind of mentioned how teams have DNA. It's like Carolina's offense, Louisville's defense, Florida State's tough team. Virginia's definitely a very heavy, heavy, heavy defense.
Minnesota's team, fall so. Game, you know what I mean? You can't really contend with Minnesota's fallout game, dude. It's not easy to create that many fouls in one game.
So,
it takes
a lot of work in the gym. I think that'll be a fun one. I think that should be kind of a neat game to watch. And I did check, Chris, the USC UCLA game 2 days from today is on FS1. So we're not getting the host like we did in football with the Pac-12 network. Maybe the Pac-12 channel people only like sticking it to us for football. But I was kind of glancing on my iPad throughout our show just to check on those good matchups in the Pac-12, and a majority of them are on FS1. I'm sure you will get maybe stuck if Colorado's playing USC in basketball, which isn't quite as big of a deal as football. You'll get them on the Pac-12 network, but it appears that in the next couple of weeks, anyways, or the next week for the matter of our show, that if you do want to watch a nice Pac-12 matchup, it is on FS1 or FSN2 compared to getting blacked out because the Pac-12 channel basically doesn't exist unless you like live in Oregon or California and you like, you know, have marijuana rights and you get a Pac-12 network channel for free. It's something kind of crazy like that, Chris. I don't know the details, but I know it's extremely tough and limited to receive in most
places. Sign me up
by those
or whatever
states.
The hell you just said. Sign me up. I heard marijuana, and that's all I needed to hear. Sign me
you,
up.
You're saying I get marijuana
throw away the key.
Sport channel for
lock
free?
Me up and throw away the key. no, that is true, and maybe we can bring back those Thursday nights, dude. The FSN, we're switching to FS1 and 2, like you said, too. Forgotten
mm-hmm,
channel,
mm-hmm.
actually. I forget about that channel, but yeah, man, this is gonna be an interesting week, no doubt about it. I'm definitely looking forward to it, and now, you know, we're right at that kind of midway point. We're getting done with January here. We're gonna be in February, and then there's like, you're looking at 5-6 weeks, and boom, it's on. So this stretch really goes pretty strong. It's hot and heavy, so to speak. We've talked a little bit of the true contenders, maybe some pretenders out there. Tough week for Kansas, that's for damn sure. A couple
yeah.
other teams, you know, really tough week. That's going to be rough. It'll be interesting to see how they come out on the other side of that, that's for sure.
You know,
but
I
yeah,
was thinking, Chris, if next year, if you want to switch it up, we could do a women's college basketball show, because all you'd have to do every show, every week, is just say, hey, UConn just won 50 games in a row. Oh, they won 30 more in a row. And, well, that's the show. Enjoy watching UConn play. I mean, it's crazy. I know, to win 90 games in a row and to do that within, like, 7 years ago they won 90, and now they won like 91 in a row. I mean, I love sports, I love dynasties, I love everything, but the fact that one program has won 90 games in a row twice in the last 10 years, it's like, holy cow. Like, it's just kind of hard to fathom that a program can be so elite and then break the record that the UCLA men had, and just, I don't know, it's just mind-blowing how you can win almost 100 games in a row without a loss. Be in a Division I competitive sport, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, unless you get like a super difference maker like Baylor did,
mm-hmm,
and how many of those come by, you know, that can block,
yeah,
can score, can do basically a bunch on the court, that's going to be tough. And it was still a grind to get there and do it, too. So, yeah, I mean, if you ever mm-hmm. want to do it, man, you know, I already got one going, so if you ever want to join me, dude, you know, I'm a big Lynx fan, dude. You know what I mean? Big Lynx fan. So, obviously, season ticket holder and all that. So, you know what I mean? I'm all about it, dude. I'm all about it, man. No. But, yeah, why don't you get us out of here, man, because this week is going to be very interesting. I'm really looking forward to next Monday to recap all this action, because it's got plenty of games this week. It's not all just Saturday and Sunday. It's during the week as well, so – and like I said, once football's done, you'll start to really see Sunday heat up and just overall down the stretch. But, yeah, like I said, be interesting to keep pace with these the conference races, especially the ACC, man. That is going to be, I think, about every 10 days you'll look and go, well, you know what, I think they're going to win because look at their next three games and that type of thing, which is always fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I will have a crappy pick of the week. Well, maybe we'll do that at the start of our show for college basketball, because we always like to do that for football, where we find just two garbage teams playing each other, and I let Chris pick a point spread. It might have to be a day of game, because it's kind of tricky if we were to try to find a point spread for like the Kansas-Kentucky Saturday. Not that would be a crappy pick of the week, but basketball lines really don't come out.
Yeah.
Much further in advance, but nonetheless, we'll try to find some garbage teams playing against each other, because that's always a very fun, enjoyable part of our show. But so since I don't have that, I'll ask you one question, then I'll get us out the door. As of right now, Chris, are you hot, cold, or mild on your ghost making the tournament dance? You read my mind. As of now.
Oh, that's funny. I mean, as of now, it's kind of weird because before the conference started, the conference play, I should say, I'm not going back to 1872. You know, I don't know when the Big Ten Conference started, but it's a long-ass time. I'm not going back to the foundation of it, okay? However, conference play this year in 2016, which still kind of makes me go, huh, it always is weird to me because it always, for years, started after January 1st. But that's neither here or there. You know, right here and now, losing three in a row, I should add, yeah. You know, that sucks, right? I mean, losing Wisconsin, I'm not going to be bummed out about that. I thought we played pretty damn well. The thing that gets me is the Penn State loss. You know, to lose, okay, so you got your ass kicked in the game. You hadn't got your ass kicked all year, big deal. You got to win the next game.
Mm-hmm.
You got to win the next game to not get on that run because of the schedule. So currently right now, your confidence sways, obviously, because of the three in a row. However, before the conference play started in 2016, when we talked, we looked at the schedule, and I said if we're 5-4 or 4-5 after those first nine games, we'll be in pretty good shape. And looking what's on paper, some teams are down, some teams are up, though. You know what I mean? So it's kind of a weird flow there. But right now I'm pissed about the Penn State loss, period. You know what I mean? The Michigan State does hurt, but we won three in a row, and I think you made up for that Michigan State loss at home when they're leading because you beat Purdue on the road. So you're like, okay, that's in the past.
Mm-hmm.
They win three in a row. They took a L, but then would beat Ohio State in a tight game. You know, that type of stuff. Okay, no big deal. But now they've lost three in a row, and that's a little rougher. You know, at Michigan State, is that a win when I chart it up? Nope, it's not. Wisconsin at home, is that normally a win? No, not necessarily, although we've beaten them when they've been ranked in the last 10 years plenty, at home anyway. I like the way we played in that game. It's really the Penn State, especially Marshall, how they played the first half against Penn State. It was like, oh, yeah, dude, this is nice. They're really honing in on their defense, and they're looking good. I think it was like, God, I can't remember, but they're up by like 10, and they were playing good. They didn't get many points at all. So I'm kind of bummed out, but, yes, I think we get in the tournament. Obviously during the three game skid, it's hard to say, oh, you know, talk to me 10 days ago, I probably would have told you a 6 seed or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Getting in the tournament, I do think we can still get in the tournament. These next couple of games though, really count a lot, but it's tough, man, because like I said, after nine, you're halfway through the season, there's 18 games. So
mm-hmm.
After nine, 5-4 or 4-5, I thought we'd be in pretty good shape. So I guess my mentality is to kind of keep that in the back of the head unless we lose to Ohio State on Wednesday. Then you're like, all right, dude, here we go. You know what I mean? So
sure.
I'm going to say yes right now. I feel like they can still make it, but it is a little tougher with that. The quality thing about this is we only have one guy you know, that we're going to lose next year. So this whole squad's coming back, and the depth is coming in as well. So I'm excited right now. In fact, we just got the best kid out of the state last year, Amir Coffey, who's played very well as a freshman. And then the year after that, so not this year, but the year after that, we got the best kid again. He just signed. And when Reggie Lynch is going out after his senior year, he'll be coming in, and he's a top 50 player. So as far as college basketball, but as far as them developing the program, I'm really positive at this moment, considering last season too. That was a huge dropout. So Yeah, I think they can do it right now. I feel that way.
Okay.
It's a long
cool.
ass answer,
you know,
by the way.
Right. Hey, well, we always like to talk the national team. We always like to get our teams in a little bit and get a little carried on. I'll be ranting about my Carolina defense a couple of games this year, and you'll be building up some huge Gopher wins and hopefully not ranting too much on hopefully not future losses. And as of right now, Chris, just to counter your question or answer, I do have Carolina in the tournament as of now, just so you know. I know.
Going out on
a
ledge,
little hit or miss.
If you're listening to this, guys, put
confident.
Money on this because this could happen, guys. This really could happen. I know it's weird.
Go to Vegas and bet. Carolina's making the tournament, guys. Call it a lock.
Out of
the box show.
You could call this show the out of the box show because who's going out of the box like that, dude?
I mean, I got us in the tournament, Chris. I'm saying about 97% locked that we're in. So we'll see what happens for my baby.
I gotta see the computer ranking before I agree with you. But once I see the computer ranking at the percentage point, then I may take a look. If it's anything over 80.3, I'll go with it.
Make sure to tune in next Monday to see if Carolina's on the bubble. Chris and I will be back again. We love everyone that listens to our show. Feel free to call in. We normally always get more college basketball callers than we do college football. For what reason, I don't know. But people are always passionate about their squads. If you're a Duke fan, you want to come in here, so be it. I as much as I hate them, I respect them too because it's that rivalry. So enjoy your
just
weekend.
Just remember, I mute them. So I'll mute them for a while. I can always mute Marshall for a couple minutes just to be able to get your point across as a Duke fan. So keep that in mind.
Fair. Have a good weekend. I always say stay healthy, have good family news, watch some college hoops, and enjoy when we come back on Monday with lots of breakdowns. Again, Kansas, man, what a week. Let's see what happens to them. Take care. Have a good night. Peace.